Welcome to our Holden Village podcast. For over 50 years now, Holden Village has traveled a rich history of faith that has transformed a copper mining town into a vibrant place of education, programming, and worship. Holden has sought to welcome all who seek contemplation and community in the remote wilderness of the beautiful Cascade Mountains. We continue to invite people of all ages to come alongside our rhythms, which inspire and equip travelers for a sustainable life of faith outside the village. And we continue to listen and reflect on our story and history and seek to discover our place in God's creative mission in our world. Our podcasts are a way of sharing our conversations with our teaching faculty around reformation, the reforming of our relationships with the earth, with each other, and with the divine. Let's tune in and join the conversation.
My name is Lynn Willis. I have a PhD in pharmacology and spent my career at Indiana University as a biomedical scientist. The whole notion of self-medication is a very important one for people who live in the United States. Many of these folks consider this self-medication to be a right. Certainly if anyone were to offer to restrict or curtail access to self-medication, Congress would certainly hear about it, as they did when the effort was made back in 1993 to curtail the availability of dietary supplements. The whole subject of self-medication and non-prescription medicines can be categorized in terms of the way our federal laws relate to the accessibility of these medications. There are two basic laws in this country that regulate three categories of over-the-counter or non-prescription medications. One of these is the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938. That's been amended up through the 1960s and beyond. This law covers conventional over-the-counter medicines like Benadryl and Tylenol and things of this nature. The other law is one that covers dietary supplements. It's a relatively new law. It was adopted in 1994. It's called the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. And the thing that sets it apart from the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Law is that whereas the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Law sets up a very rigid and rigorous set of requirements that must be met by manufacturers before they can sell over-the-counter medicines, the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Law has no restrictions and regulations that relate to the sale of dietary supplements. In essence, dietary supplements are unregulated. This was by design. The folks who put together this law in Congress did so in an effort to save access to dietary supplements, which were at the time threatened by the FDA because of perceived abuses in that industry. The long and short of what has been a result of that law going into effect is that the abuses still remain. But the FDA is fundamentally powerless now to directly regulate dietary supplements unless there is a severe and serious threat to the public health, in which case they can offer, that is, a threat that is presented by a given dietary supplement, in which case they can, in fact, remove it from the market. But this is much, much more liberal in approach compared to the law that regulates other non-prescription medicines. It's important for people to understand this difference between the laws that regulate these two categories of drugs. There's another category that's also covered under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. These are so-called homeopathic remedies. These remedies, although they are in fact covered, and the labeling of these products is very similar to the labeling that exists for conventional over-the-counter drugs. Nevertheless, these drugs are exempt from the rigid requirements for purity and truth in labeling and all that is involved with conventional non-prescription medicines. And this creates a problem because all three categories of these remedies are often mixed on the shelves of drugstores and other stores that sell non-prescription medicines. And a consumer is at a great disadvantage if they do not know how to distinguish between the requirements for dietary supplements versus those for over-the-counter conventional remedies, as well as for homeopathic remedies. The objective of the series that I presented here was to outline, characterize, describe these differences, put them into stark with relief with one another to enable individuals to make rational, objective decisions with regard to their purchases of over-the-counter medicines, whether they were conventional medicines, dietary supplements, or homeopathic remedies. CBD is in a class all by itself, and the FDA doesn't quite know what to do with it yet. Technically speaking, it's illegal, because the federal law, it's still covered under the federal that classifies it as a class one narcotic. That's going to change, but I don't know just when that's going to change. Mm-hmm. And even though a number of states have legalized the use of cannabis products, and even though there's been a law passed, truly a farm law, that allows farmers now to grow hemp from which people can take extracts of cannabis that don't contain THC, but contain very little THC, to take CBD. Even though those laws now exist, both federally and with certain states, the federal law can still trump those laws. And if the FDA took it into their head that, or the DEA took it into their head that they needed to crack down, they could do it and stop the sale of CBD. Now, CBD, the FDA does not view CBD as a marketable drug except in one circumstance. It views it as an investigational new drug. And because it's an investigational new drug, it cannot be sold legally as a dietary supplement. It's being sold as a dietary supplement now, but legally it can't be sold that way. There is a drug that was just approved last year, CBD. It is CBD. It's called Epidiolex or something like that. It's been approved for the treatment of two very rare forms of epilepsy in children. It works, and it's been shown to work in clinical trials, and it's been approved. In that context, it's never going to be available as a dietary supplement because it's a drug. Yeah. And it's being investigated now for a number of other therapeutic applications, for pain, for cancer pain, for just general pain, for cancer pain, for the treatment of cancer, for dementia, and a variety of other applications. But it's too soon to say whether or not CBD is going to work in this setting. What we do know is that the doses of CBD that are being used in these clinical studies that are needed to begin to even show any effect at all are 10 to 100 times higher than the amount of CBD that's available in any product that's currently on the market. There's virtually no CBD in any of the products that are available right now. And so for people to claim that this thing is a wonder drug and it takes away their arthritic pain and so on, is hard to reconcile with the notion that there's hardly any of it there. We don't know yet. Medicine doesn't know yet whether CBD actually does work at those low doses. Chances are it doesn't. Chances are it takes these higher doses to work. In which case, anybody who's paying the exorbitant amounts of money that they charge for this product are being ripped off.
Thanks for joining us for another Holden Village podcast. Be sure to view the links in the description for more information or visit our website to find out more about the village. We hope you will make a pilgrimage to Holden. Blessings and peace to you.